12. One of these heralds, quite misunderstood, indeed openly promoted and praised, was the sports craze that took possession of the youth of Germany. In the years 1924, 1925, and 1926, Germany suddenly blossomed into a great sporting nation. Never before had it been a land of games. Never had it been creative and inventive in sports like England and America. In fact, the true spirit of sport, the self-effacing, playful absorption in a fantasy world with its own rules and regulations, is altogether foreign to the German mentality. Nevertheless, in those years, the membership of sports clubs and the numbers of spectators at sports meetings multiplied tenfold at a stroke. Boxers and sprinters became national heroes, and the 20-year-olds had their heads full of athletics results, the names of winners, and all those numerical hieroglyphs into which feats of speed and skill are translated by the press. It was the last German mass mania to which I myself succumbed. For 2 years my mental life stood still. I trained doggedly as a medium and long-distance runner, and would have sold my soul to the devil without hesitation if I could once have run 800 meters in under 2 minutes. I went to every athletics meet, and I knew every runner and his best times, not to mention the list of German and world records which I would have been able to reel off in my sleep. The sports news played the same role as the army bulletins 10 years before. Athletics records and race times replacing the numbers of prisoners and quantity of booty. The headline, "Huben runs 100 meters in 10.6, evoked the same feelings as, in its day, 20,000 Russians taken prisoner, and "Peltzer wins English championship and breaks world record," corresponded to events that the war, alas, had failed to produce. Paris falls, perhaps, or "England sues for peace." Day and night I dreamed of vying with Peltzer and Huben. I missed no sports meet. I trained 3 times a week, stopped smoking, and performed exercises before going to bed. I felt the utter joy of being in complete harmony with thousands, tens of thousands of people, yes, even with the entire world. There was no one of my age, however alien, uneducated, or unpleasant, with whom I could not at first meeting engage in prolonged, animated conversation. About sports, of course. Everyone had the same figures in their heads. Without the need to say a word, everyone had the same feelings about them. It was almost as grand as the war. It was the same sort of great game again. We all understood one another. Our spiritual nourishment was statistics, our souls perpetually aquiver with excitement. Would Peltzer beat Nurmi too? Would Koenig do it in 10.3? Would one of our German 400-meter runners finally manage 48? We trained and ran our little races, our thoughts always with our German champions at the International Athletics Meet, just as we had fought our own little battles with small Teschen rifles and wooden swords in the streets and playgrounds during the war, our thoughts with Hindenburg and Ludendorff. What a simple, exciting life! Strange to say, politicians from right to left outdid themselves in praise of the remarkable fit of imbecility to which the youth of Germany had fallen prey. Not only were we once again able to indulge our old vice, the narcotic of the cold, unreal numbers game, this time we did it with the full attention and the unanimous approval of our mentors. The nationalists, stupid and crass as ever, felt that our healthy instincts had found a practical substitute for military service, which had been abolished. As if any of us were interested in military drill. The left, over-clever and therefore, as usual, even more stupid than the nationalists, regarded sport as a splendid invention by which we would henceforth be able to vent our warlike instincts harmlessly and peacefully. The peace of the world was, they felt, assured. It did not strike them that the German champions, without exception, wore little black, white, and red ribbons in their buttonholes, the colours of the pre-war Reich, while the colours of the Republic were black, red, and gold. It did not occur to them that through sport, the lure of the war game, the old thrilling magic of national rivalry was being exercised and maintained, and that this was not some harmless venting of bellicose instincts. They failed to see any connection. They were blind to Germany's relapse. The only man who seemed to realize that the forces he had released were taking a false and dangerous path was Stresemann himself. He occasionally made hostile references to the new aristocracy of the biceps, which added to his unpopularity. He seems to have been aware of what was afoot, that the blind forces and passions whose entry into politics he had barred were by no means dead, and were merely seeking an outlet, that the new generation refused to learn to live in an honourable, civilized way, and that they would use their freedom only for collective mischief. In any case, as a mass phenomenon, the sports craze lasted just 3 years. I personally overcame it even earlier. To last longer, it would have needed something comparable to the concept of the final victory in the war, a goal as well as an end. It remained always the same names, the same numbers, the same sensations. It could go on indefinitely, but it could not occupy our imaginations indefinitely. Although Germany had come in second at the Amsterdam Olympics in 1928, a marked disillusion and cooling of interest followed immediately. The sports news disappeared from the front pages and returned to its own section of the newspaper. Sports grounds were less full, and it was no longer certain that every 20-year-old had the latest time of every 100 meters runner at his fingertips. There were even some who did not know the world records by heart. At the same time, the leagues and parties, which treated politics as a sport and had seemed for a few years to have almost died, returned slowly to life.